Category B6 Sports Programme. Off the ball.
With regard to all the retirement stuff, I've been answering them. I'm blue in the face, and I'm afraid it's the same answer. I'm just going to leave it to the end of the season and see how it feels. And I don't feel as though I'm under any pressure to pull the trigger on making the decision. I know I've been cut a bit of slack by Leinster because they can't replace me with a foreigner anyway. With the Union, I just said, listen, I need to try and play the Six Nations, see how I feel, and I'll make the decision when the time is right.
Yeah.
And I can't, I'm not lying to people. And people must be sick of hearing this. Well, they really must.
I do think it's terrible that we rush sports people out when ultimately it should be a decision that they get to make. It's such a personal thing because, like, we again are just sports fans who watch, whereas you guys live this and the void in sports people's lives. And again, we talk to them about it. They're like, yeah. It did take me a long time to get over the fact that my daily routine changed. Now, you've obviously had a lot of business stuff going on in the background anyway, so I think there's probably stuff going on in your head that you can transition maybe a little bit easier than some people.
The transition thing is huge because I've seen people in the past retiring and then going, okay, what will I do now? And struggle. Mm. So I decided I definitely, a few years ago, I needed to try and make a transition in a few areas that I had interest and keep them, try and work the early years of those into when the time was right for me to hang up the boots. So, a couple of things I enjoy doing in my downtime, albeit my downtime over the last month has lessened massively.
Yeah.
It is nice to be able to switch away from it. I don't live, breathe, eat, sleep rugby. I do enjoy my job, but I have an ability definitely to be able to switch away from it and look at other areas of my life.
Yeah, so that hopefully that'll be a much easier thing whenever it does happen, which I hope is in a couple of years' time as opposed to at the end of the season. One final quick question about that last month and how it's a life-changing event. My daughter was born the night before you guys beat Australia in the World Cup, and I missed the game because I was on the way to the Labour Ward. But I just remember that first month being really on edge because there's this tiny little thing that you now have responsibility for, but also full of boundless energy. It's a weird kind of paradox. You're edgy and full of energy. I don't know how you've managed to also combine playing high-level international rugby with that.
It's needs must, I think. Every situation is different, and this is the situation I find myself in. It's great that after games it does become irrelevant what you do on a Saturday, albeit it's hugely important in your life, but not as important as what's happened when my daughter arrived a month ago. So it's exciting to be able to go back home after an international and know that I won't be judged on my performance.
Yeah.
Because she's going to need the same thing she needed the previous 3 weeks. Last weekend, I arrived home with a dead leg, a concussion, and a cut ear, and she didn't care much for that. So she still wanted her nose bag at 11, 3, and 7, and I was the man for the job.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to hobble around. Luckily, you've got good hands that you're not liable to drop stuff.
Yeah, I have to say I was delighted to be able to get away from the hospital after the first week, where I didn't have people judging my speed of nappy changing and feeding and stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
and
so I could just do it
in my
own time and under no pressures or constraints. Yeah. So that was all good.
Well, essentially, we were asked to nominate Pat McQuaid for a third term in office as a UCL president. Ever since USAD released a reasoned decision on the 10th of October, I kind of just got very upset with the whole thing, and it just drained away any belief I had left in basically pro cycling, any belief I had left in the UCI, and consequently I didn't see how I could actually support Pat for a third term, because ironically Pat got me into the sport. I was playing a bit of soccer, and in the off season I was using the bike to keep fit and stuff like that, and with Nissan coming, you know, what a fantastic show. So I started getting interested in from 85 onwards. So if you look at the history from that time, you know, every few years we have like a major kind of drug scandal, you know, so there's only so much a man can take, you know, and I think that personally there was no way I could kind of say to the UCI, well, you know, jog on, everything is fine, because I don't believe it has been fine. I just think, again, I just would like to stress, because I'm not anti Pat McQuaid in any way, shape or form. but it's just, it's the UCI management, and that's, it may be more than Pat, it certainly is more than Pat McQuaid, but there has to be change, and we have to bring the sport on. So unfortunately it's an Irishman at the head of the organisation, and I feel that we do need change.
The story of you resigning today has actually gone around the world. I started by saying it happens very rarely in Irish life. Do you hope that there's a possibility that this derails what now looks like an almost automatic procession for Pat McQuaid?
Again, as I say, I'm not anti-McQuaid. I hope what happens is that a really good, strong candidate comes from Europe and somebody who has a clear vision about how to bring cycling forward, you know, wants to do all the governance things, you know, has a look at the anti-doping, comes up with a really good strategy for that. And there's a competition. I think you need a competition. You can't have that a man. I think he had an opponent in his first election, which he won by a landslide. I don't think he had an opponent in the second one. And now if he doesn't have an opponent in the third, after all that's gone on, I mean, that's just ridiculous. And I mean, as little belief as I have in cycling at the moment, I would certainly have none after that. But somebody has to come forward. Somebody has to stand up. And just on that, I've been taken aback by, you know, a stupid Dubliner who just says, well, no, you know, he's sick of all of this and I don't want to play the game anymore. But I've had emails from all around the world. I've been messages all day long on my phone, as I say, email, because my bloody email is on the Cycling Ireland website.
Yeah.
So the thing is, I'm getting them from all over the world, and I haven't had one negative one. I've also, what made up my mind to resign, Ger, was I talked to a friend of mine last night, and I was just asking about it, and he says, Andrew, if you're unhappy, he says, what's the point? He says, it's not as if you're getting a big salary there. It's not, you've done a hell of a lot of good there. You know, why do you want to, you've only one life. Why do you want to, have this in your life? You can walk away from it. So I said, right, that's it, I'm going to go. But I said, I'd just hold off. And this morning when I got up, I had an email from Betsy Andreu. So when you get it from somebody like that, you just have to do the right thing. So that's why I resigned.
Did she say resign, or was she just saying?
No. She just said she knew what it was like to be in my position. She wished me well. she said a few other remarks, but I can't actually repeat them on air. But no, she was supportive, and it was really, it was nice to get something like that from somebody like her. Lance actually called her fat, I believe. She's far from that, but she was the one who was there in the room with Lance Armstrong when he admitted the cocktail drugs he had been taking or whatever. Some of your listeners might not know, but so to hear somebody from that. And I met Kimmich on Sunday as well out there in the race in Skamullin. So I don't know. I'm just blown away by it all, to be quite honest with you.
You know, like, I think anyway, my day, Friday morning was usually a fairly relaxed morning. Billy Bremner used to do it a bit, you know. I wouldn't say mess around, but it wouldn't be quite as serious as it was on Monday or Tuesday. And the manager allowed that. But generally speaking, in my time anyway, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, when you're training, there was no messing around at all. You couldn't do that. You couldn't do it. But some lads did it nasty. When Duncan McKenzie came to the club, well, Duncan was a trickster anyway. He could do all sorts of tricks on and off the pitch. He could jump over a mini chair. Did you ever hear about that?
No.
Duncan McKenzie.
What?
He could jump over a mini. Right, and he signed from Notts Forest for, I think it was $250,000 at the time. He could do two things. He could jump over a mini, and he could throw a golf ball the length of the pitch.
What?
Over the length of the pitch. And we when he came to the club, because when you look at a mini, it's not easy to do, you know.
No, hang on a second. Explain, how does it work? Does he take a long run-up?
No, we were in the dressing room shortly after he arrived. He said, hey, Duncan, what about, you know what lads are, well, footballers, you know, what about this, you know, jumping over the mini business? You know, we don't believe you, you know. So there was a mini out in the car park. So we said, right, come on and show us out there. And we walked out, and it's quite high, the mini.
Yeah.
And there was a few bets on it, you know. I said, oh, fiver, you don't do that. And, you know, fiver here, fiver there. And Duncan, like, he, what he did, actually, Jack, he sort of only strolled up to it two or three strides And I honestly thought he was going to turn back and say, look, lads, I'm only joking. Hopped over it. Hopped over the Mini.
In one go?
One go. Hopped over it. And then we got him out on the pitch, and he threw the ball from one end of the pitch onto the terraces.
A golf ball?
A golf ball.
And does this mean that he was amazing at long throws and also...
No, it meant nothing. It meant nothing. In fact, it became a bit of a joke with the lads that the reason they spent $250,000 on him was because he could jump the Mini and throw the ball the length of the pitch.
Ken, you're more than welcome to sit here for the next 3 hours. We're glad to have you here. There's just one thing, though, because we want to look after your personal life here. The last time you were on News Talk, it's fair to say, you got yourself in a whole spot of bother with the missus.
Digging his hole, all in the ground, so big and sort of round it wasn't there.
I booked the weekend away in Paris this weekend because it was Sarah's 40th, you know, we were going away to celebrate, you know. It was nice to be in Newport instead, and Paris can always wait, you know.
She'll be delighted.
I'll tell you one thing, the wife wasn't too happy. I tell you, when I was ringing home, I said I was in the quarterfinal.
Wait until she realises you told everybody how old she is on the radio as well.
She's cringing, she's just sitting beside me here, she's going, oh no, why did you do that? Yeah. So, she doesn't look at it anyway.
there's no digging out of this one.
I'm crawling.
Well, there was I, the sturdy me
tried to save it at the end there.
I know, I was digging a hole for myself. I was really crawling, that was really sad. But she was sitting beside me.
Did you get away with that?
I'm still trying to make up for it. To be honest, she's probably listening to right now. So I'm gonna get the full earful when I go back. But thanks anyway for playing that.
No worries. We'll look after you this evening.
No problem. it's a statement of the city's eccentricity. It's a sporting event where, you know, outside of the press, really nobody cares who finishes in the top 20 of the men and women or the top 20 in the wheelchairs. Everybody's there to watch, you know, your pal Bob from Asheville run in a cow suit or something, and to be outside and to be in the spring and have and just have kind of an ongoing festival for 26 miles, and that's what was disrupted yesterday by a horrible act of violence.
And is it the type of thing that's embraced by the city, or is there kind of a grudging, oh, it's the marathon again?
We love it. We love to complain about it because it's inconvenient. It ties up the city. You know, it's a holiday, Patriots Day. It's celebrated only in Massachusetts. Which has always been a subject of some hilarity, that our politicians just needed an extra holiday, so decided to make one out of Lexington and Concord. But it's like a lot of things in Boston. We all love to complain about it, but we don't know what our lives would be without it.
In your piece on Grantland.com, you talked about a real bittersweet moment where you see people being reunited, and the joy is immediately tempered when you realize that the people who are sitting around still looking grim are people who
the remarkable thing about any event like this, good or bad, in our modern society here is the instant communication. Everybody has a cell phone. We have social media. People, and of course they shut the cell phones down in the immediate vicinity of the crime scene because people weren't entirely sure that it was a cell phone that was setting off the blast. And then at the end of the marathon, it's chaotic anyway. It's all these people being shuffled into, trying people needing medical attention, people looking for their folks, people looking for their wives, and it's very zooey anyway. And with this, I mean, where not only were you being shuffled to the finish line, you were being shuffled three and four, five and six blocks down towards the Charles River or towards the Common and the Public Garden. It was really a scene of quite chaos, and people were still reuniting with their loved ones as of 5 or 6 o'clock last night.
What was that like to be wandering through?
Well, I mean, a lot of people were, usually it started almost, the joy of the day almost started coming back a little bit. People were, telling each other the stories and where were you and what were you doing when it happened and who did you hear from? But there were a lot of people who simply were sitting under the trees and not moving. I mean, you have to understand, not only was this an emotionally devastating event, it was an emotionally devastating event that was experienced by people who'd already run 26 miles. It was an emotionally devastated event for people who were already physically devastated. And that was the astonishing thing to me. I mean, to leave all of your physical reserves out on the race course, and then to have you have to touch off your emotional reserve in a site like this, which is something beyond my imagination.
First question goes to you, Phil. It's the Phil Bob Quiz of Jason McAteer.
Look at the size of her boobs.
In a 1998 World Cup qualifier against Macedonia, Jason McAteer gave away a penalty for a handball, kung fu kicked a Macedonian, and then was promptly red carded for kneeing another Macedonian in the knackers. Your question is, what colour was Ireland's jersey in that match?
I know it.
It was white, no?
Ooh!
Do I get a bonus point?
No, no bonus points, but it was orange.
Can I tell you what else it did?
It was Ross the orange shirt. Abomination, the one and only time.
Can I tell you what else it did? When I walked into the dressing room, I put my foot through their dressing room door, and because it was made of plywood, it went right through. And then I got a bill for $3,000 off the Macedonian FA for breaking the dressing room door.
That's a pretty expensive...
I didn't play in that game.
That's a pretty expensive door. Okay, Jason, we're going to play the Jason McAteer quiz of Phil Babb.
Feeling to The Cure to Luther Vandross. It is an eclectic mix.
Hey! International Madam History. So we do all remember the infamous Phil Babb Nutcracker episode.
Yes.
Think you know the answer to this one. Which Chelsea striker scored the goal that nearly saw Phil Babb cut in two by the goalpost?
Ridiculous.
This is for you. Casiraghi.
Torres.
100% correct.
Thank you.
There's only four questions, Phil. You're going to get this one.
1-0 up.
Okay, question number two for Phil Babb. In 2009, what were Jason McAteer and John Barnes filmed doing in the Tranmere Rovers car park after the pair were sacked as the club's management team?
Trying desperately to load a mountain bike into the back of a Jeep.
Yes! Hey! It's 100% right. Is it true that one of your mates rang you up and said, you're doing that wrong?
Yeah, we were putting the bike in the back of the car and my phone went. And my mate went, turn the wheel the other way. And I went, what? He went, turn that wheel of the bike the other way. And I went, where are you? He said, I'm sitting on my couch. He said, you're live in the sky right now.
Question number two for Jason McAteer. Phil Babb scored one league goal in his Liverpool career.
Get on to this. Right?
Against Coventry in September 1996. Who had the assist on the goal?
Do you know what, right? I had Babs here bet. I won't tell you how much it was, but it was a fortune, right? And I said to him, I bet you... you don't score this season. I had he wouldn't score, and he took he would score, right? And then I went and put a cross in, and he went and scored, and I had to pay the forfeit, and it was a fortune. I crossed the ball for his goal that season.
100% correct.
Yeah. Cost me a fortune, that.
Question three for Phil Babb. Before the 2002 World Cup, Jason McAteer kept a diary for the Irish Independent. Which Ireland player is he referring to in this entry from Saipan?
Oh, no.
He's been hitting me with these one-liners, fail to prepare, prepare to fail, all week. Sometimes I think he thinks he's Alex Ferguson. You all go with the flow, he said. What do you mean? What goes with the flow? I replied, dead fish, he said. I thought, wow, profound, the Messiah has spoken.
I'm lost and I wrote it.
Oh my god.
Who do you
well,
think
it wasn't
that
Roy,
be?
Was it? It's got to be Mick, isn't it?
No. Let's play this
fair. Steve Staunton.
No, it's Roy Keane. Roy, yeah.
Who always used to say?
What?
He used to always say, fail to prepare, prepare to fail. That was his one-liner.
Oh, he talked.
That's the only thing he ever said to me.
Is anybody...
In 10 years.
Hang on a minute.
Oh, and you're not my mate.
You weren't even talking to him.
He did say that to me once as well. You're not my mate.
Okay, I've got one final question because this is going to be decided, I'm pretty sure. Question number three. What number did Phil Babb wear at USA 94?
Oh!
That one.
Babsy. Was it 1-11? You've got to give me that.
No.
I was 21. I never thought I was even going to play.
Give us a number.
Has it got a 1 in it?
Give us a number.
Oh, what number were you?
What are you asking me, Roy? I don't know.
Was it an odd number?
It was number 14.
Oh, I would have gone out if you said.
Okay, question number 4 for Phil Babb. He's got to get this right, otherwise it's totally gone.
Missing his pen, yeah, that's it.
Who scored more league goals for Liverpool? Steve Staunton, league goals. Who scored more league goals for Liverpool? Steve Staunton or Jason McAteer?
Oh. That's close.
Got 2 against West Ham.
It's Jason.
It is. Steve Staunton never scored a league goal.
Didn't he?
No.
I was only guessing as well.
So he didn't either for Liverpool.
Seven
made up.
Cup goals. All right, question number four. This is the winner. Who scored more league goals for Liverpool? Who scored more league goals for Liverpool? Steve Staunton or Phil Babb?
That's it! What you win?
This is the guy who didn't pick you that we're talking about as well.
How many tickets does he get?
He gets two tickets.
Right.
No, he's won. He's
Who's going to take me? Babsy.
It's 100% correct.
Thank you.
News Talk 106 to 108.